Cabinet colleagues, Chairman and members of the Public Service Commission, Head Civil Service and Permanent Secretaries, ladies and gentlemen, a very good evening to everybody. I'm very happy to attend the Administrative Service Dinner again. My last occasion was in 2022. It is an important annual event for the Administrative Service to come together to congratulate those taking on greater responsibilities, to celebrate the contributions of retiring leaders, and to reaffirm what it means to be an administrative officer, serving Singaporeans and Singapore. Let me begin by recognizing the extensive contributions of our former head civil service, Leo Yip, who has retired after 43 years of distinguished and dedicated service. I've known and worked with Leo for many years. He started as a police officer and went on to senior leadership positions in many other agencies. In 2003, following the post 9/11 economic downturn and SARS, Leo set up what was then called the Workforce Development Agency, WDA, to address the urgent need to retrain and reskill our workforce. WDA laid the foundations for today's skills future. As head civil service for nearly a decade, Leo set the tone and expectations for the service. He upheld professional and ethical norms and left no one in any doubt of the standards expected of every officer. He deeply transformed the public service, rejuvenating and refreshing it to deal with new challenges. During COVID-19, Leo led the public service with a steady hand, coordinating response efforts, plugging policy gaps, and directing resources to see Singapore through the pandemic. Leo is well respected as a leader and a mentor. He cares deeply about the development of our public service and has educated and inspired a whole generation of younger officers. My deep appreciation to Leo for your sterling contributions as head civil service. Long may the public service continue to benefit from your expertise and experience as you stay active and contribute in other capacities. You haven't really retired yet. Let me also recognize two more retiring PermSecs, Ng-Chee Kern and Pang Kin-kiong. Ng-Chee Kern retired in December after 41 years of service. After serving as the Chief of Air Force, Ng-Chee Kern took on many other leadership roles. As Director of the Security and Intelligence Division, he did excellent work, putting up well-researched and lucidly written reports and analysis, about which, alas, I can say very little tonight. As the first permanent secretary for Smart Nation and Digital Government, Ng-Chee Kern started us on our digital government journey. He helped form GovTech and led efforts to create key digital enablers that we take for granted today, such as SingPass and MyInfo. Then as PermSec for Manpower, he worked closely with the tripartite partners to develop and implement major initiatives like the Platform Workers Act, the Workplace Fairness Act, and our progressive wage models. I thank Ng-Chee Kern for his dedication to the service and wish him well in the next chapter of his life. I shall be meeting him soon to discuss the next chapter of his life. Thank you, Ng-Chee Kern. I would also like to thank Kin-kiong, who will be retiring in June after 35 years of service. He's a bit on tenterhooks this evening because he's not sure it will be approved. Amongst his many posts, Kim Kyong served as Director of the Internal Security Department, Permanent Secretary for Law, PS for Transport, and finally PS for Home Affairs. His grounded yet visionary leadership has transformed how we safeguard our national security and protect Singaporeans from harm. He oversaw innovative legislation to deal with foreign interference and maintain racial and religious harmony. He helped form HTX, the Home Team Science and Tech Agency, and pushed for the adoption of technology and new operational concepts at the front lines. As chairman of the Home Front Crisis Executive Group, HCEG, Kim Kyong played an instrumental role during COVID-19. He coordinated and mobilized multiple public and private agencies, orchestrating a whole-of-Singapore response to the crisis. He was a pillar of support to the multi-ministry task force. Even during this current Iran war, Kim Kyong is leading the HCEG to support the Home Front Crisis Ministerial Committee, coordinating our national response. Once again, thank you to Liu, Chi Keun, and Kim Kyong for all your contributions over the years. Thank you very much. The three retiring PERMSECs belong to a team who have contributed greatly to our nation's success by delivering good government for Singapore. This depends on having good political leadership and a good civil service, with both working closely towards this shared goal. In particular, Singapore relies on a first-rate civil service to develop and implement sound and imaginative government policies and deliver high-quality services to the public. And the administrative service is a critical component of our system. Your role is to be generalists. You are posted to multiple ministries and agencies over your career so that you develop an understanding of different issues and how they relate to one another. You work upwards with the ministers, but also internally with professionals and specialists in your ministry or agency, and laterally with colleagues in other ministries. In order to develop and implement policies, run organizations, deliver results. You are expected to bring diverse experiences and perspectives to bear. You have to see the wider national interest and yet understand the domain issues your ministry deals with. You must appreciate policy implications and trade-offs beyond your departmental concerns and take them into account in your proposals and decisions. But being a generalist does not absolve you from requiring specific expertise or knowledge, or mean that intelligence, drive, and management skills are all you need to be a competent AO. AOs need to acquire a substantial amount of knowledge in order to perform your role. First, you need a broad appreciation of our national circumstances, the state of the world, how Singapore relates to the region and the global economy, how external developments can affect us. You also need to understand our overall national goals and the basic principles on which our government operates, upholding fundamental values like multiracialism, fairness, meritocracy, rule of law, promoting economic growth and social equity, applying sound economic principles to achieve policy objectives, and uplifting the underprivileged through socially inclusive policies. Maintaining the integrity and incorruptibility of government, securing and advancing our interests in a hazardous world. These basic considerations guide all our policies and actions. You have to understand what they are, why they matter, and how to apply them. Second, within your own domains and ministries, you need to understand what the issues and policies are how they came about, the logic underpinning the policies, what we've learned in implementing them, what their shortcomings are, and most importantly, how we can think about improving them. We are no longer in year zero of nation building, discovering problems and inventing solutions from scratch. It has been 60 years of patient work, trial and error, thinking and rethinking, improvement and progress. In each domain, our policies embody much hard-won experience and insight. For example, in land transport, how to develop and fund a comprehensive public transport network, and how to price and allocate scarce road space. In healthcare, how to structure and regulate the healthcare system, and how to fit in private sector doctors and hospitals. In foreign policy, how to manage relations with neighbors and partners and cultivate friendly ties while defending our national interests. AOs joining the service or new to the ministry need to become familiar with and master this know-how in order to make an intelligent contribution. I'm not suggesting that we should treat current policies as immutable gospel truths to be enshrined and worshipped. Far from it. We must constantly review and rethink them, update them as circumstances change, and even from time to time, break the mold and start afresh. But before you do any of that, please master them. The civil service will help you to do this through induction programs and courses such as SMP and LAP. But most of all, you must be willing to put in the work to study and thoroughly understand the issues while on the job. Underpinning the importance of this expertise is the simple truth that there is such a thing as good policy and bad policy. Policies that work and those that don't, policies that are in the national interest and those that are not. Whether or not a particular policy is good for the country is not a subjective matter of opinion. It can be established through a careful study of the issues and objectives, logical analysis, real-life experience, and sound judgment. And we should get the most capable team we can with expertise and commitment to work on our problems and come up with the best policies for the country. In Singapore, this is not a controversial idea, but it has become so in some other countries, especially where the system has faltered, where successive governments have not delivered the results their populations expect, and where the populations have lost trust in individual leaders and parties, or in the entire political class, or the whole elite of these countries, or sometimes in the whole system of government. When this happens, people become disillusioned and bitter. They feel betrayed. They stop believing that the country needs good policies to succeed or good people to be in charge of it, and that these can be arrived at through cogent analysis and reasoning and by carefully scrutinizing candidates for public office. They say, "I don't understand these matters, nor do I follow the arguments. We've trusted the experts and they've failed us. Enough of experts and expertise. Out with the elites." In their frustration, they then support populist leaders who exploit their anxieties and angst, who peddle simplistic slogans, who advocate going with the gut instead of logical thinking or scientific evidence, and who work up their discontent in order to seize power. Unsurprisingly, this often makes things worse rather than better. And sadly, This seldom causes the public to realize their grievous mistake and conclude that the way out is once again to support good leaders and sound policies to put things right. You've taken the wrong path. You can't turn back. This has happened in quite a few Western countries, even some which were once seen as paragons of democratic virtue and good government. It explains why the anti-vaccination movement and climate change denial have gained momentum in these countries, not to mention anti-globalization. Singapore is not in that tragic situation and must never allow ourselves to get there. We see it as our job as political leaders and civil servants to come up with good policies and implement them well. We tell Singaporeans plainly and honestly about hard realities and the rationale for our policy choices. Singaporeans understand that there is a right approach towards problems and issues and that there's no free lunch. Because of our track record, they generally trust the government to make the correct choices on their behalf, even if it means accepting difficult measures from time to time. We've sustained this for many years, made systematic progress, and steadily improved Singaporeans' lives. And trust is crucial to this virtuous cycle. But good policies do not magically appear out of thin air. We need a high-quality public service to produce and implement them. Equally important are ministers who are as familiar with the issues as their permanent secretaries and who can provide the political inputs and substantive guidance essential to effective policymaking. Civil servants cannot get involved in party politics, but being apolitical does not mean being neutral about the direction of the country or the substance of the policies you are in charge of. Your role is not simply to implement whatever policy your ministers decide upon. You must have a view, take a stand, and make considered sound recommendations to the political leadership. Having participated fully in formulating the policies, you must feel responsible for and committed to the policies ultimately adopted. You cannot be indifferent as to whether a particular policy is decided upon or its opposite. Civil servants must have conviction in your policies, in your policies. Contrary to the impression you may have formed from watching Yes Minister. This depends on your relationship with the ministers and requires a stability of policy and consistency of national direction. You can't do this if ministers come and go and or policies chop and change. Fortunately, Singapore has maintained this stability and consistency over the past 60 years. This has enabled our civil servants to develop a close yet proper relationship with the political leaders. And this is a crucial reason we've had an effective team able to produce good policies and deliver good government for Singapore all these years. We, both ministers and civil servants, must maintain this ethos of close partnership, conviction and excellence so that we can continue to deliver good government to the country. I recently published an essay on microeconomics and public policy in the Singapore Economic Review Journal. The essay set out how we have used economic laws and market forces systematically and extensively in our policies in order to achieve many social and economic objectives. I gave some examples: public housing, the casino entry levy, pricing of PUB water and the U-Save rebates, the GST tax, and GST vouchers. The implicit premise underpinning the essay is precisely that such a thing as good policy matters exists, and it is the government's job to come up with such policies and implement them. But as several of my readers pointed out, at a more fundamental level, whether or not economically sound policies can be adopted depends on whether such a rational approach to policymaking is politically feasible at all. In other words, it depends on getting the country's politics right. The government must be able to win political support for good policies, and voters must be willing to support leaders who advocate for and implement such policies. Otherwise, even the most brilliant policy ideas remain just ideas and simply cannot be carried out, which is unfortunately the case in many countries. As Jean-Claude Juncker, who is a former Prime Minister of Luxembourg and also later European Commission President, famously put it, "We all know what to do, but we don't know how to get re-elected once we have done it." Singapore has been exceptional in avoiding Juncker's dilemma over a long period. We've sustained a virtuous cycle of good politics enabling good government for the reasons which I explained earlier. Sustaining this virtuous cycle involves getting a lot of other difficult preconditions right, including upholding absolute integrity and incorruptibility in government, ensuring that elected leaders are working for the people and not for themselves, adopting realistic remuneration policies for public servants and political office holders, and building a highly competent team of political leaders and civil servants who not only have their hearts for Singapore, but are capable of delivering the high quality of government that Singaporeans have come to expect. We cannot assume that all this will just continue happening on its own. We have to work very hard to keep it going. There's yet another factor which has enabled Singapore to work in this exceptional way, but which is not within our control, and that is a favorable external environment. For 60 years, we've benefited from a generally stable, rules-based international order, anchored and championed by the United States. Peace and stability prevailed in most parts of the world, including the Asia-Pacific region. New economies and markets opened up to international trade and investment, particularly China. A multilateral trading system created a level playing field for economies big and small. The overall zeitgeist was one of win-win cooperation among countries that basically wished one another well and wished to prosper together. Countries accepted greater interdependence as the way to achieve prosperity and believed that this would reduce the risk of conflict and war. It was an exceptionally stable and peaceful period of world history. Singapore made the most of these favorable conditions to grow and progress year after year, far beyond our own expectations. Our rational policies and long-term plans were not derailed by external events, and so the virtuous cycle of good policies and good politics could be sustained. I do not believe the next 60 years will be anything like the last 60. The world is changing fundamentally. The international system is under tremendous strain. It's increasingly shaped by great power rivalry and roiled by the unilateral and unexpected actions of some major countries. Major countries which once promoted and upheld the rules-based global order are now wielding their power overtly and directly to seize immediate gains for themselves in win-lose fights. Countries are weaponizing dominant positions in particular industries or in critical minerals or materials to gain leverage over opponents or to hold rivals back. All countries are having to invest more in security and defense and prioritize national security and resilience over economic efficiency and growth. All these mean less cooperation on trade and investments and less prosperity and human welfare all around. The world has become less orderly and secure and more chaotic and unpredictable. War and conflict are now more likely. Life has become much more dangerous for a small country like Singapore. It will be much harder for the government to deliver prosperity and progress for Singaporeans in this challenging, changed environment. There's a greater risk that the virtuous cycle will falter. We need to work much harder to keep it going and keep Singapore exceptional. But that we must absolutely do. We must draw on the resourcefulness and capabilities of the political leaders and the civil service to come up with solutions to the challenges and difficulties ahead, if not to solve them, at least to manage them. We must make the most of the energies and ideas of the population to transform and upgrade Singapore, not just top-down and centrally, but also bottom-up and across the board. And we must strengthen the trust that Singaporeans have in each other, in their leaders, in their government, and in the Singapore system. We must reinforce our social cohesion to tackle difficulties as one united people. And only thus can we continue to do the right things for Singapore and keep Singapore exceptional, safe, and thriving for many years to come. And the administrative service must play your part and rise to this challenge. Thank you very much.